We're on verse 3, Etasmat Jayate. Etasmat Jayate Pranaha. Etasmat Jayate Pranaha. Manasarvendriyanicha. Manasarvendriyanicha. Kambayuchotirapaha. Kambayuchotirapaha. Prithivi Vishwasya Tarini. Prithivi Vishwasya Tarini. Okay. Sandhi. Etasmat Jayate Pranaha Manaha Sarva Indriyani Cha. Kam Vayuhu Jyotihi Apaha Prithivi Vishwasya Dharini. See? Etasmat, from that, Etasmat Brahmanaha, from Brahman, from that Brahman, Jayate is born prana, the vital force, Manaha, the mind, Sarvendriyani cha, and all the indriyas, the organs of action and the organs of sense organs. So from this, the pranas, the vital force, the manas, the mind, all of the indriyas, karmendriyas, jnanendriyas, the organs of action sense organs, all of them are born. Etasmat jayate, from this, kam, space, vayu, the wind, the air, jyoti, fire, apaha, water, prithivi, the earth, vishwasya dharini, the prithivi, the earth, that which is vishwasya dharini, the support of all, the support of everything. Okay, so, let me just give a little context here. In the previous verse, divyaha hi amurtaha purushaha sabahyabhyantaraha ajaha apranaha amanaha shubraha akshara parataha paraha. The previous verse, Brahman is being defined as that which is divyaha, that which is alaukika, that which can't be objectified in any way, right? That which is pure chaitanya, consciousness. Not something that can be... So Shankara says alaukika means you can't make it into an object, right? So that consciousness, which is the subject, the pure awareness, that can't be objectified. Because it can't be objectified, it must be amurtaha. It's got to be free from form. Because it's not an object in the world. So it's not going to be subject to time and space or dimension. So it's amurtaha. Who is this divyaha amurta? The purusha. The purusha is that one who is purnaha, infinite, you know, without any limit, without any boundaries. That purnaha is the one residing in the body. Okay. So from the standpoint of the jiva, from the standpoint of the individual, where do I look for this divyaha, this conscious being that is formless? I'm not going to see the conscious being who is formless out here. Right? So here I am as a jiva with a physical upadi. And this physical upadi, through the sense organs, I'm experiencing the world. I, as a conscious being, am experiencing the world. Where am I going to find Brahman, who is divyaha and amurtaha? In this world that I experience through my sense organs, I'm only going to find names and forms and things that I can objectify through my sense organs. Through my mind, if I'm not going to be finding the names and forms that I objectify through my sense organs, I'm going to find moods and emotions and fantasies and thought flow. And the buddhi, thought process, and memory. That's what I'm going to find in my mind. Right? I'm not going to say, oh, look, there's Brahman. If I say, look, there's Brahman, then there's an object there. However, the conscious being that I am, where am I going to find that? In this world that I experience, I'm walking around in it with this upadhi. Right? It is this body, mind, jiva, that is asking the question. Right? And it's this body, mind, jiva, this person here, who is saying, you know, who is the conscious being that I am? Right? Who am I, this conscious being? So this who am I, this conscious being, where am I going to find it? I'm not going to find it out there. That conscious being is located in the puri, right? In the body, in the heart. But when I find it, it's sabahya abhyantaraha. It's something which is neither inside the body or outside the body. When I find it, when I recognize it, that puranaha, that purusha, that self which is abiding in the body, is now neither inside the body or outside the body. In fact, it's not something that can be, it's alaukika. It's divyaha, it's pure consciousness, which is free from any type of form. And it's non-objectifiable. So they're talking about me, my being, this innermost self. And this innermost self that is non-objectifiable is ajaha. It's because it's non-objectifiable, it has no form. It's ajaha, it's not born. If it's not born, then my own presence, this me that I am, is absolutely changeless. Because it has no form, it's not objectifiable, and it's never come into being. If it came into being, then it has to be part of the creation. Right? I've never come into being, and I'm non-objectifiable, and so therefore changeless. If I'm not a form, not objectifiable, just pure consciousness, divyaha, right? Then this being that I am is a pranaha. It has no prana. I have no vital force. I am not breathing. I have no digestive system. I have no in and outgoing breath. I have no circulatory system. I have no udana. These things are not happening for me. Now, when you sit in meditation and you relax your body and just sit with your body, and then you sit with the body which is breathing, the body is breathing, an in and outgoing breath, you're aware of the breathing. Your being is not breathing. Consciousness is not breathing. The body is breathing, right? You're aware of the breath. And so that's a beautiful meditation, in fact, to differentiate your own presence, the conscious being that you are, from the in and outgoing breath. You're the one that supports the breath, that illumines the breath, that is present to the breath, that indwells the breath, because there's nothing that you don't indwell. But you yourself are not breathing. So apranaha. Prana stands for all of the vital force. Amanaha. You are not thinking. Brahman, the Purusha, is not thinking. That would be very messy. If the one that illumines the thoughts, you who are present to the thoughts, were also thinking. Where does it stop then? That is an infinite regress. Yeah. But in fact, every thought, every emotion, every feeling, every imagination, every perception, the mind itself, whatever activities are occurring in the mind, whether they be feelings, emotions, thoughts, fantasies, all of them take place in you, are illumined by you. You indwell those thoughts. There's nothing about those thoughts that is away from you in any way. But you changelessly indwell them. It's like you changelessly indwell the body. You illumine the body. You indwell the body. But you're not bound by the body. You indwell the mind. You're not away from the mind. You illumine the mind. But nothing that takes place in the mind changes you in any way. That's why these different forms of Vipassana meditation, or even we don't have to have any type of meditation, is so useful, because it gives you an opportunity to just sit and recognize the reality of that. The reality of the fact that actually I am here, the thoughts keep changing, and I remain. That's a fact. So to slow everything down, just so that I can be aware that I am the stable presence which indwells every thought without changing as the thoughts come and go. By indwell, why use the word indwell? Because there's no distance between me and the thought. It's not that the thought is over there and I'm over here. So there's no separation between myself and the thought. The thought itself is, by its very nature, known. The thought itself, by its very nature, has consciousness. It has being, right? It has existence. There's no consciousness or existence that is, the thought is not in any way away from or separate from consciousness and existence and being. The only thing is, and this is the whole relationship between satyam and mitya, between Brahman and Maya. This is the relationship. There is no separation, distance, or two-ness. There being two. Between the conscious being and the thought. Just keeping with thought for now. There's no separation. The thought has no substance or being apart from you. You are its being. You are its being. But the thought goes and you don't. The imagination goes, you don't. And so the conscious being is what we call satyam. That's the substrate, the adhishtana, the very thing that is there. And the mitya, the maya, the mitya is the order of reality. The maya is that manifestation of knowledge, or that, Swamiji is now saying things like this, manifestation of knowledge, or that manifestation, the manifestation of knowledge, which itself has no separate being apart from you. But it also has no independent reality. It has no reality apart from your being, because the thought is something that comes and goes. Right? It comes into being, it goes out of being. This is what's so incredible about change. Change, anything that changes, it comes into being and it goes out of being. It comes into consciousness, comes into awareness, goes out of awareness. It comes and goes, in other words. But it doesn't come and go away from or separate from consciousness. So your being is the very substratum, the very self. It's the very self of whatever experience is there. But the differentiation, that's why we have to over and over make this differentiation between satyam and mitya. Satyam means that which doesn't come and go. That which is, that which doesn't come and go. There's only one thing that fits that. And that's the conscious presence of your own self. That's your own self. That's Brahman, the conscious being. That is satyam. Because it never comes and goes. You can't budget. There's nothing you can do about it. It is there, period. You can't cover it. You can't move it, you can't shift it, you can't get away from it. It is always the very substance of absolutely every experience that is there. That is satyam. Mitya is everything else. Anything that does not, anything which is, and by is I mean it's experienced. That's what I mean by is. So anything that is, but is not satyam, that's mitya. What makes it not satyam? It comes and goes. It changes. But we say mitya. Mitya means all of this that we experience that comes and goes. It depends upon satyam. I am itself. I am the clay of the pot. I am the being of every single experience that is there. That being never ever changes. But the being that never ever changes is the being upon which that which does change depends. So you can't say that there's satyam and mithya over here. Mithya has no, there is no mithya apart from satyam. Right? It doesn't even exist. Mithya requires satyam. The same way that the clay, the pot requires the clay. Without the clay, there's no pot. But the pot is an as-though vishesha. It's an as-though quality of the pot, of the clay. The pot is. You can't say, really, it's a quality, right? Because it has nothing to do with clay. But here's the clay, which is now a pot. But it's not really a pot, because really there's only clay there. Right? That's the as-though. That's the mithya. And so this needs to be understood in terms of this creation to be able to say, I am the whole. Now here in this verse, what we're doing, pranaha, amanaha, I am this purusha, I myself, right? I am not breathing. There's no in and out going breath. I am not thinking. Right? I am here. The mind is not away from me. The emotions are not away from me at all. But I am the steady conscious being that illumines the motion. I am the I am of the emotions. I am the I am of the thought. If I say I am thinking, I am the I am presence to the thought. I say I am sad, I am the I am presence to the sadness. I am the I am presence, not the words, but I am the me presence to the happiness, the me presence to the agitation, the me presence to whatever experience is there. And there is no experience that is away from that. That's the satyam mithya. If that's understood, then I start to recognize I am the whole. But first I need to recognize that I am free from the mithya, in the sense that I'm not influenced or changed by the mithya. Otherwise, I can't be the whole. If I'm changed by mithya, by something which is mithya, that means some of these objects that I'm experiencing that are coming and going, then I'm that and not this. Right? Because my body, this body, mind, sense, organs, here, this one, is going through all kinds of things that you are not. Right? Your body is going through its own things. Your sense organs are going through their own things. Your perceptions are different. And in this room, everyone, we're all having thoughts and perceptions. They're all different. And what about in China or Russia? But I have to be able to say, you know, I am you. Right? I have no mind. My mind, in the sense that my being, this being that I am, it is not subject to any of these modifications at all. I'm free from all of that. Otherwise, I'm an object in the world. Right? That's why I can say I am you, because if I'm not an object in the world, I'm not objectifiable, then there's not going to be two non-objectifiables. Right? If there's two non-objectifiables, then they're objectifiable. Right? Then they exist in the creation. So the one that is not the me, that's not objectifiable, is not breathing, not thinking, not feeling, in terms of all of these emotions. So this is the amanaha, and then pranaha, then shubraha, means I am pure. Now, shubraha, pure, means there's nothing else but me. The consciousness is not contaminated or participating in anything else. It has no parts. It has nothing other than itself. That's what's meant by shubraha. Shubraha means, you can say free from raga, dvesha, free from likes and dislikes. That's all from the standpoint of the mind. This is shubraha from the standpoint of the Atma, from the standpoint of Brahman. It means I am, there is nothing there but me, consciousness. The conscious existent being, the consciousness which is existence, is one without a second. There's nothing else. It's not consciousness plus something. It's just conscious being. That's it. That's shubraha. Now he says, and I'm going through this verse 2 so we can see the extraordinary connection between this verse and the next one. Now he says, aksharat parataha paraha. This purusha that I am, that is shubraha, just the pure me, the the pure being that I am. I am the one that is Paraha, supreme, or the very being, the very support to the Akshara. The Akshara, that which itself is Parataha. Here, now, what this means, Parataha Aksharaha. If I am Paraha, if Brahman is Paraha to the Akshara, he's talking here about Maya. Brahman also is Akshara. Brahman is Akshara, means that which is changeless, indestructible, can't be modified or diminished in any way. That's Akshara. Maya is also Akshara, because Maya is that principle from which the whole creation projects and resolves. Maya is Paraha, because it's the bija, it's the seed of the projection of the creation. And the creation always goes back to that unmanifest, what we call Maya. So it's the Maya, from the Maya the universe projects and resolves. So the universe is always changing. It's not Akshara. It's projecting, it's changing, it's going back into unmanifest condition. But the Maya, which is responsible for this change, is always there. Maya, which is the very causal condition for the projection and the dissolution of the entire universe, that Maya is called Akshara, because it doesn't diminish. It doesn't come and go. But Maya is Mithya. What is the truth of the Maya? Akshara Paraha Purushaha. The Purusha, the self, the self that I am. I am the truth, the Adhishtana, the very being of the Maya. Right? So this Maya then, so it's now going to be myself, my being, plus this beginningless Maya, which is Akshara, means it never diminishes, it doesn't come and go. It is the natural to Brahman. Natural means it's not separate from Brahman, it's not other than Brahman, it's not anything, it's Mithya. You know, it's not away from Brahman, it's not Brahman, it's not anything in its own right, it is Mithya. That means it is, and totally dependent for its being on Brahman. It is as Mithya. Okay? And so that Mithya Maya is what is responsible for the projection of this creation. So now this Purusha, me, the one who doesn't breathe, doesn't have a mind, doesn't have any duality. Now in this verse, he says, Etasmat, from that, Jayate, is born Prana, the breath, Manaha, the mind, Sarvendriyani, all of the indriyas, from this Purusha, right, who is changeless, non-objectifiable, right? Everybody get this? Changeless, non-objectifiable, free from form, birthless, always exactly the same, pure consciousness, Shubhraha. From this one who cannot change in any way, cannot become anything because has no parts, is not objectifiable, it's just pure, non-dual consciousness. From this conscious Purusha, the prana is born, the mind is born, all the indriyas are born, the five subtle elements are born, the whole earth is, the earth is born. How is that possible? Because Akshara Parataha Paraha, because of the Akshara, the Brahman, plus this Maya, which is as Akshara, as beginningless, and as, what do you call, changeless. Changeless in the sense that you cannot, it's not going to wax or wane. It is beginningless as Brahman is timeless. So Brahman, with the help of this Maya, which is Mithya, means there's no place that you can put it. You can't put it in Brahman. You can't put it outside of Brahman. You can't put it away from Brahman. You can only say it is Brahman in that it is Mithya. It has no being apart from Brahman. So Brahman plus this Maya. So Etasmat, it's from this Brahman with the Maya, is born the prana, the vital force, the mind, all of the indriyas and the five subtle elements, the space, air, fire, water, earth. From that Brahman, this whole subtle creation, Hiranyagarbha, has come. Okay? They're giving the list here of the subtle elements and everything that makes up the jiva. You can take it both for the subtle jiva and for the whole also. But look at the components of the jiva. The prana, the five pranas, there's 19 elements to the jiva. Okay? The five pranas, which would be the in and outgoing breath, circulatory system, right? The digestive system, the peristaltic movement. These are called the vital force, five pranas. Then there's the five sense organs, right? For all ears, eyes, nose, sense of touch, sense of taste, five sense organs. The organs of action, so they're all considered subtle, right? The hands, speech, the hands, the being able to walk, the feet, right? The ability to evacuate, the sexual organs. So the five organs of action. So that's 15, okay? Then the four components of the mind, all here just being given by manas, right? Which would be the buddhi, your intellect. The chitta is your memory, right? The ahankara, the I notion. The manas is just the fluctuating mind. These are just four types of cognition that the mind can have. It's all under the manas. So these are all of the subtle elements that make up the jiva. This is what transmigrates, right? So that this jiva transmigrates, taking physical body after physical body, physical body. But these are the components of you, right? There's the purusha, you, the atma, that doesn't change. And then there's this creation of which the jiva is a part. It says now, first it lists all of the components of the jiva, the subtle body. Then it lists the five subtle elements, and it lists them in an important order. In an order that we consider important just to kind of understand the beauty of the universe. Space is considered the most subtle. Right? Its element is shabda, sound, as we'll see in a moment. But why they say space is the most subtle is because if you take space, air, fire, water, earth in that order, space you can't touch. Right? You can't feel space. You can't see space. You can't taste it. You can't smell it. And so space is the least available for your perception through the sense organ. So it's considered, because of that, the most subtle. In fact, sound is attributed as the quality of space only because that's the one that's left out. Right? So we'll see that when we go through the next. The next one in subtlety is air. Because air, you can hear the wind blow, and you can feel it. So that's two for air. So it's more subtle. It's less subtle than space. You can feel it. You can feel it, and you can hear it. Fire, the next one down. Fire, you can hear it crackle. You can certainly feel it. But you can feel its heat. But it's the first one that has form, right? So fire is often worshipped as Ishwara, because it's the first of the elements to have form. Swamiji talks a little bit about that in his commentary. But so now three, it can be perceived in three ways. The next one is water, because water, you can hear the trickling of the water. You can certainly feel it. You can see water, right? And you can taste it. Water is considered to be the most neutral taste. Right, then you can add flavors to it, but it itself is the most neutral taste. You can't taste fire. Okay? So then water has four attributes, ways of perceiving it. So it's less subtle. And the earth is the least subtle, because all five sense organs can perceive the earth. You can also smell it. Right? You can hear it. You can feel it. You can see it. You can taste it. and you can smell it. In fact, water, so you can't smell water. If you're smelling it, you're smelling some earth in the water. And so you see a certain beautiful order to the creation in that way. And so if you take the space, air, fire, water, earth, space as the most subtle is something that they attribute sound, because of the five of the five sense objects, sound is the only one left out. So sound is given as an attribute to space. And so if sound is the attribute of space, then what would be the sense organ for space, for sound, would be the ears. Right? Be the ears. For vayu, for the wind, the first one to be touched, the skin, the sense of touch. For fire, which is the first one to be seen, then the eyes are related to fire because the eyes are the first to see form. Water, which is the first one that you can taste, right, is the sense of taste then, right? Smell for the earth, the first thing to be smelled, then the sense of smell, that sense organ. So all of these things are related. So your eyes, in a sense, right, are related to sound and to, this will be important in our next verse, it's related to sound and to space. Do you understand? That the eye, your ears are related to sound and to space. So we're going from the individual jiva to the whole. The jiva is the ears. The ears perceive sound, and what allows for the sound is space. Okay? So space is going to be Ishwara. So say if I go for the vayu, the vayu is the wind, okay, is air. So my sense of touch, my skin allows for me to touch, right? But the air is what I feel. The air allows for that. So the air becomes that which holds the sense of touch, or is related to the sense of touch, like that. And similarly on with form. So in the next verse, we're going to see a beautiful, beautiful relationship that relates the jiva to the Lord in an upasana. So I'm just giving you a touch of that now. We're going to see an upasana where we look at the Lord as the heaven is his head. You know, the sun and the moon are his eyes. You know, the four quarters are the space. So from this point on, for quite a few verses, we're going to be looking at Ishwara as being nothing but Brahman. Okay, so now if we go back to this verse, it says, Etasmat jayate pranaha manaha sarvendriyani cha kam vayur jyotirapaha prithivi vishvasyadharini. So it talks first of all about the nature of Hiranyagarbha, okay? I mean, all the subtle elements. It hasn't gone into Virat yet. But this is what needs to be understood at this time, okay? Because we're going to have about four or five verses coming from this. From your being, which is just pure consciousness and changeless, with this Maya Upadi, which is Mithya, your being is Satyam, that means what? Satyam means the conscious self that you are, just your own presence, never alters in any way, and it never comes and goes, can never be covered, just like the clay, just like the pot can never cover the clay, really. So you can't have a partial experience of yourself. You can't say, I really need to have a pure mind so I can have an experience of myself. No. Okay. You need to have a pure mind, a mind that is relaxed, so that you can be present to the teaching, so that your mind can be relaxed enough and present and available to the teaching, so it has the capacity to differentiate your own presence from all this that is changing. Right? But in that act of differentiation, what you recognize is that your being is never covered in any way. Whether the mind is agitated, whether the mind is blissful or happy, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood, whether you're taking a hike through beautiful nature or you turn the corner and you're in a garbage dump, it makes absolutely no difference to your being. Your being is just like the sun, the examples use, just like the sun illumines whatever is in front of it. Whatever is in front of it doesn't cover the sun, right? The sun illumines it. What if a huge rain cloud, you know, moves in? Huge thunderstorm, rain cloud, dark clouds move in. Then what about the sun? Is the sun covered? To who? Is the sun covered to itself? No, it's illumining the clouds, right? It's illumining the rain clouds, right? If the rain clouds move away, is the sun covered? Has it changed? Has the sun experience changed? No. It's just now it's illuminating whatever nature is there, whatever is there. So who are you? Are you the ahankara? Are you the I notion, the I thought that is lost in the clouds of the mind? Is the I thought which is identified with the cloudy mind, can't see through the cloudy mind to experience the sun? Right? No. That's the ajnana. That's ajnanam. That's ignorance. What is jnanam? What is knowledge? The ahankara, the one that is a product of ignorance, recognizes I am the sun. I'm the conscious being that's illumining the rain cloud. I'm the conscious being. I'm the me. I am me. I am here, changelessly, illumining this depressed mind. I am here, changelessly, abiding fully, completely, wholly, lighting up this agitated mind, this blissful mind, this dull mind. It makes no difference. It makes no difference. If you think that your state of mind is giving you yourself, you're absolutely mistaken. Nothing's giving you yourself. Yourself is already 100% available to you as your being. There is no experience to be gained. You are present. That doesn't mean that we would rather have a calm, lovely mind, but I like a clean house also. I prefer a clean house, and I prefer a happy mind. And there's reasons born of ignorance of why the mind becomes unhappy. But that's a different issue. It's a totally different issue. It's true, the mind does relax and it does become happy because what has caused the ignorance that's causing so much unhappiness is removed. And so the mind abides naturally in a state of calm and happiness. But that doesn't make any difference to you. You are illumining the ignorant mind. You're illumining the happy mind. You're illumining everything. And you are always, always the same. When the mind recognizes that, there is no coming and going for you. And you recognize there never has been. You recognize, not only do I not come and go now, I never have. This is not anything new. I'm not creating a new phenomena. I'm recognizing the reality of myself as being ever-present, fully, wholly, completely, as my being, not partially. I am not partially present. The problem is, until our mind settles down and is relieved of some of its torment and pain, you know, that torment and pain takes our attention and we need to take care of it, right? We need to handle it and take care of it because it's in pain. Just like if somebody is in pain, you need to treat them and take care of them and help them. If your body's in pain, you need to treat it and help it and take care of it to relieve that pain. But in spite of the pain being there, yourself is still the same. But the pain is distracting. And if it's emotional pain that is caused a result of ignorance or a result of trauma, childhood traumas and all of these things need to be taken care of. You know, and so we take care of them. That's a beautiful thing. But that doesn't mean that you are becoming, yourself is becoming fuller or more whole or more present. And the more you recognize, once this knowledge becomes clear, you recognize your wholeness and your changelessness of your being as you tend to these problems. As you tend to this mithya, which is causing the problems and the ignorance and everything else, as you tend to that, you tend to it, and at the same time, recognizing the wholeness and the stability and the changelessness of yourself. And as you take and as you clear out the wounds and care for the wounded parts of the mind, right? Then those hurts go away, right? So that they don't have to be experienced. Right? Those hurts don't have to be experienced. Right? Whether the hurts are experienced or not, I'm illumining whatever is there. I am indwelling the hurts, and I'm indwelling the absence of the hurts. I am changelessly, wholly indwelling the hurt, and changelessly, wholly indwelling the absence of the hurt. So this self that is not some state of mind. I am not a state of mind that comes and goes. I am the self of every state of mind. I don't come and go. I don't become a big self in a quiet state of mind or a little self in a agitated state of mind. Yeah. I don't become a self having a spiritual self in an absorbed state of mind or a non-spiritual self in an agitated mind. I am the self that is amurta, formless, divyaha, shubraha, pure, always exactly the same without any fluctuation whatsoever. And shubraha ananda. Ananda means whole and complete. Purnaha, purnaha, purushaha, the purna, the wholeness and the fullness, which is not to be beaten. As in this one, I am the one who is present in all of this. And from me, all of this has come. So now this Upanishad is in great detail. It's going to be saying, you know, I am the whole. I am the innermost being. I am the self of the whole. In the next verse, I am the self of Virat. You know, I am the one whose head is the heaven. I am the one whose eyes are the sun and the moon. Right? I am the one from whose feet the earth has come. Right? I am the one whose ears are the space. Virat. Right? And then after all of that, I am the innermost being of all of this. I am not only all of this, I am the self of all of this. I am all of this, and I am the self of all of this. So I am the whole. And then it'll go verse after verse after verse, make you see, yeah, I am the whole. Not only that, I am on the Vedas. I'm the Vedas. I'm the rituals, right? I'm all of the karmas. It goes in great detail, so that you recognize that the presence, this Purusha, this changeless being that I am, is the one who is all of this. It is the one, I am the one from whom all of this has come. And as mitya, this has no being apart from me. I am all of this. Just like the clay is the pot. It's not away from that. The water is the ocean. Right? The water is the waves. It is the ocean. There's nothing else there. I have to be able to see that I am the self of all of this, changeless. So I say, I am the self. That's you understand the satyam, the changelessness of all of this. I am the self of all of this. It means I don't change. I'm the presence. I'm the being of all of this. All of this is me, right? And none of this body, this form, has any being apart from me, right? So I am the changeless self of it, and I am the truth of all of it from the standpoint of the mitya itself. So that'll do for the day.
My God.
It's just taking a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.